So good morning. So we'll now continue from where we left off yesterday. Anyone who's following in Michtav Meliyahu, it's on page 459. And we're continuing with the description of the contrast between Yaakov and Esav. The title is Meramzim Min HaShamayim. In life, one frequently receives hints from heaven. Divine providence goes not only to the world at large, but to each individual person, according to what Hashem feels can bring a person to a higher level. And this is hinted at, the concept of choice, its relationship to what Hashem predetermined, which is an age-old question, is hinted at in the struggle that took place between Yaakov and Esav. We would describe this to be a reference to the good and evil struggling within each person, and which is really basically the struggle of mankind, whether we will overcome the destructive instincts which exist in the human race, or whether we will follow the constructive instinct for the good. So, when Rivka was expecting the children, it says, "Vayitrotzetzu habanim b'kirba," that the children, the sons, were struggling inside her, which the sages figuratively describe when she went past doors which opened to Torah, that means where people were studying the Torah. Yaakov ran inside the womb and tried to go out. And when she was passing the doors to her daughter's temples, Esav, within the womb, struggled to go out. Obviously, this is not to be taken literally in any manner. But the concept is that even birth, before birth, this is struggle. So, of course, this is a rather difficult concept to understand. Obviously, it's intended figuratively. But still, what's the idea behind it? That the character of these twins was already to some extent fixed before birth. We already discussed this. This is connected with the concept of the prenatal experience, which every human being goes through. So the question is, Sharizeh Taloi Bebechira. This is dependent upon freedom of choice. So, as it is described by the sages, that before a person is born, it's already decided by the angelic powers whether this person is going to be rich or poor, strong or weak, wise or foolish. But it's not decided whether it's going to be a Rasha or a Tzaddik, a saint or a sinner. And also, the Malachim, the angelic powers that influence the yet to be born human being, so they cause the soul to promise, make a Shavua, that even the whole world will try to influence this person to be a Rasha, a wicked one. But they say, you become a Tzaddik. And also bring the verse from which the Gemara learns it. The verse which we say on Sunday morning, from Tehillim. Asher lo nasa lashov nafsho v'lo nishba lemirmo. This is a clean kitziv, nafshi nafsho. Me, the soul of man is also the soul power given by God. We refer to the neshama, the breath of God. It's a divine spark within each human being. And that divine spark commits a person. In other words, what, let's say, a contemporary psychologist calls the unconscious God, which is the conscience of the human being, is the voice of God within man. By the way, just to understand its importance today, that it says already in the words of the sages, that what did Amalek do? He fought against Israel because Israel expressed the importance of Yirat Elokim, which is the human conscience. And he felt that the human conscience has to be destroyed. And it's interesting, these are exact words of Hitler Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, in his Mein Kampf, or in a later conversation that was with Eitlinger. He said, why would we have to destroy every Jew in the world? Because the Jews invented the conscience, which weakens the mind of man. And unfortunately, this power is continuing today with the terrible worldwide criminal bodies that exist. Where's the conscience gone? Anyway, every human has a conscience. And we, Amitzor, in fact, Lo Yare Elokim is used in the Tanakh constantly, very frequently at least, with regard to non-Jews, non-Jewish societies. As it is also in the case of Amalek, Lo Yare Elokim. We don't expect Amalek, who didn't get the Torah, to keep Shabbos, or even to say Tefillah every day. But all the nations of the world, Lo Yare Elokim means they've got a conscience, which is used, let's say, the first time this concept is used when Avraham Avinu went down to Egypt, he was afraid that we're going to kill him because his wife was so beautiful. And what were these words? Lo yare Elokim. Ein yirat Elokim b'makom hazeh. I mean, there were no people in Egypt, surely, who were what we would today call Yirei Shomayim, or Yirei Elokim. But what he meant was Vaharaguni. There's no conscience at all, they've killed people. And they even kill them as cruelly as you can imagine. That's going on today. So this is the human conscience. And every human being makes an oath. That means, what do you mean makes an oath? Inside himself, there is that innermost important feeling of the human being that he ought to be better than he is. Tell them what he ought to do. So, Mashbiyanoto. Then the important comment of Rabbi Hanina on this description is, this teaches us, HaKol Bidei Shamayim Chutz Miyirat Shamayim. Everything is in the hands of heaven, is controlled by Hashem, and therefore is also predestined, except Yirat Shamayim. Yirat Shamayim means exactly this, the extent to which he follows his conscience, that is left to him. That means we find all other beings, they are fulfilling functions, and they have no power of choice. The animals, some are tame, some are wild, they've got no choice. The human being has the choice. If you see, he's got the choice to be the most destructive being on this globe, and he's got the choice to be the highest being on this globe, most saintly. Think to the achievements of the great saints. It's unbelievable how far they can really transform their life to be godlike. So, let's conclude this paragraph. And then we'll analyze this question a bit more, because this raises the whole question mentioned also by Rabbi Akiva and Pirkei Avot, Hakol Tzafui. Everything is foreseen, everything is predestined, Varashut Natuna, and freedom of will is given. And this is the age-old question. There's here a contradiction between human freedom and between the predetermination, and even not the determination of what will be, but the knowledge of what will be. How can you have pre-knowledge if each human being can choose to go in the path of sin or in the path of virtue? But to link this up with this predestined situation of each baby when it's born. So, this we explained already in the previous shiur, that it's a reference to the basic qualities of each human being's constitution, that it is fixed from birth and can't really be changed. What can be changed is the point of freedom of choice. But that does not mean to say that the power of choosing is not predetermined. The power of choosing is predetermined. But the point at which the struggle takes place, good and evil, is not predetermined. The question is, to use this, we can say this parable of Yaakov and Esav already in the womb having this struggle. And what's the point of having that desire to go out to a place of learning or to go out to a place of idolatry? And surely there's some deeper concept behind this. So you see, the deeper concept is the Tzuriyot. Ma shitzarech iyum biyotehu, ma to'elet bepirchus hazeh, ureshem ma hu ba. Yudua she'ein da'avar haba b'mikre, v'chad b'chay avoteinu ha'kdoshim aleim ha'shalom. So, I think this will leave to the next part of this shiur. What's the specific significance by Yaakov and Esau? But the basic teaching we have from here is that one aspect we can understand, the initial nature of Esau was to be aggressive. To be aggressive, and to a certain extent to go in the wrong direction. That was his yetzer. He had a yetzer to go, and like there are some people today as well. There are some more primitive societies who worship idols and have a passion for it. Like we, all of us, I suppose. We have a struggle, and we have times of passion to be angry at people, angry at ourselves, angry at other people, and we shout. And we have even a feeling, I'd like to hit him. So, you know, some have to struggle with that. How do they control their anger? Others have to control their sexuality. You know, even people who are very moral, and they don't give in, but they've got to struggle. They get tempted. If they see something provocative, they get tempted. And we have to struggle with it. And some give in, some don't. And the tendencies, the type of Yetzer Hara that's given to every person is different. So when it says Esav had a Yetzer Hara, we see later on he did have a Yetzer Hara for idolatry, but not just for idolatry. He had a Yetzer Hara for raping, for killing. And we said yesterday, David HaMelech also had that Yetzer Hara in all those matters that Esav had. It's given also Admoni, same thing. You have the same Yetzer. So, but still, if from birth he had the Yetzer like Esau, but he controlled it, used it for good. And as the Gemara says, person got a very aggressive nature. Sometimes the aggression expresses itself in very strong temptations. It can be for anger, it can be for food, it can be for power, it can be for pleasures, all types of pleasures. But he controls it. It's up to him. Sometimes he controls, sometimes it's difficult. So it's the tendency is there from birth. What you do, there is another question. Person is advised, that's why it said, Chanoch l'nar al-pi darko. In fact, there's a very good comment made by some of the commentators. It developed most by Rav Hirsch. By Yaakov and Esav, what does it say? It says, by Yigdulu Hanorim. Vayhi Esav, Yudeatzad Yisadeh. When they grew up from the infancy and childhood to become Na'arim, Na'arim is when you wake up, it means when you arouse to oppose, you have a feeling of resistance, your own character starts revealing itself. Because when you're children, you're very much influenced by parents, by environment. So that's the Chazal even put it this way. Chazal say, until Bar Mitzvah, Yaakov and Esav, they learned together in Cheder. And they were good boys. Fine boys. When they came, they were in adolescence, then it changed. You know, what one calls it is a typish of a. Yeah? Because a person feels, now I can think of myself what I want to do, and what my parents, what Yitzchak and River taught me, I like it. Yeah. And another person, I hate it. Yeah. And therefore, this is very important today, Ben. Well, this is one of the great problems that the Haredi world has to face. Don't face enough. The importance of making sure Chanoch l'nar al-pi darko. You've got to educate the now when he becomes the beginning of adolescence. Make sure you give him the right program. Don't expect every child or every student to sit down and get the same curriculum on no account. It says in Halacha, you've got to teach each person according to his character. And he says, this was the mistake. Apparently from Chazalim. Yitzchak and Rivka, they should have recognized that Esav needs a different education to Yaakov. They're twins, correct? But you know, even now, I know from my own grandchildren, they're twins where you can't tell the difference in one or the other. And with the twins, they always want to be together. And they're very like one another. Sometimes you get twins, one is the exact opposite of the other. It happens. You can't put them together. They look different. It happens. Yaakov and Esav, when they grew up, Yitzchak thought, but Yitzchak's idea was, in fact, he perhaps even understood Esav. He thought he understood Esav. That's why he said, okay, I'll channel Esav, channel him in the right direction, let him go hunting animals, and bring them for that's mitzvah. He'll bring the animals. And, but he was a bit blinded because he always liked to look at the good side. He looked too much at, He was so much dedicated to Hashem and virtue, you couldn't see wrong in anybody else. That happens sometimes with parents also. They can't see wrong in their children. Because there's some parents like that, they can't see wrong in other people either. But for education, you have to see where something destructive enters. So therefore, Rivka knew more because she had grown up in a house which is far removed from Torah. So she could more easily discover falsehoods. She has been exposed to falsehood. And she knew she had to keep to the truth. So this explains the Yaakov and Esau situation. So, Hashem is Borach, gives everyone a chance. A person got aggressive instincts, very good, let him become a surgeon. Or let him become a shoichet, or a moyel. Give him some, so let's say children like that, adorav, train them in Torah, become a shochet. They like it. Give them something concrete to do. They'll become a moel. And that'll be the outlet for their aggressive instincts. And the outlet is good for a good purpose. Let them become, for example, activists in chesed organizations. And then that lets out their aggressive. Let them be active in organizations, to be active with people and help them. There's so much help needed in different directions, physically. So, this is how we have to train ourselves also to channel. That's a chalet. You've got to see what's the derech, what is the initial derech, the initial character of this child. You've got to put them right direction. Okay, so now we come to the following question, more the philosophical question. So, the best answer, I mean, there are many answers given, but I'm going to give you the best answer is really given in the Rambam. The Rambam Hilchos Teshuvah, you find there, in the fifth chapter, he speaks about freedom of will, and he says, every human being, potentially, has been given freedom of will to choose to be a saint, like Moshe Rabbeinu, or a sinner like Rovan Ben Avot. And then discusses, he proves it, but if we say people don't have freedom, then there is no meaning in giving commands or prohibitions. Because a person isn't free. You can't command a person, Hashem can't command a person to do virtue, if the person is forced to do it by his nature, if there's no freedom. And then you can't explain reward or punishment. Well, how can you punish a person if he let's say he steals when he's got a gun in his back? He says if you don't steal now you're going to be killed. Whatever type of force is used. So if Hashem is predetermined, you can't change it. Because it's not responsible. Human beings aren't responsible for what they do. And there's no, to put it in the words of masters of English, there's no such thing as good and evil. It is only thinking makes it so. You can't even use the term good and evil if there's no freedom. Either just like you can't go and say that a person who's got a mania, a murderous mania, a real sick person, it's not his fault, somebody's born with a mania, he's born as a shoyte, and he's crippled in his mind, and then you've got to lock him up. And certainly don't punish him, but you've got to stop him doing evil things. And therefore, all things that are crimes are really sicknesses. And we all of us feel that we've got freedom. So, let's first look at it from the point of view not of natural determinism, which is which is a philosophical position, even used today by many philosophers. They say human beings aren't free, and they've got no soul, and there's no such thing as good and evil, and there's no such thing as divine punishment or reward. So human societies have to deal with crime on a purely medical level. Just another aspect of medicine, that's all. It's how to deal with criminals. And you can't accuse the criminal of having done anything morally wrong. It's just that society and families have brought up this situation, just like can happen with physical diseases. But physical disease that comes upon a person from birth, let's say, or from accidents of nature or acts of God, whatever you want to call them. There's a storm, and in the storm he's crippled. Can't blame the person for being crippled. So therefore, that's what we call natural determinism. Everything's determined by nature. And just like you can't blame a lion for wanting to eat human beings, and you can't give some of praise to the dove for being so timid and so kind, it is nature. No, there's good and evil, so only thinking of it. And if you take, by the way, I'll just tell you that one of the greatest, or what's considered the greatest, of the secular philosophers of the school of thought known as logical positivism, which was the most secular philosophy in recent times, logical positivism, which says that there's no such thing, not as good and evil. The only things that really exist are that which you know through sense perception and logical faculty, and otherwise everything else is illusion, quoting from their words. And that's a point of view still adopted by many people, many sociologists, many even psychologists, and certainly by many philosophers. Of course, he said all religion is illusion, and this person also, he denied the existence of the soul. No such thing as the soul doesn't exist. It's all an illusion. Otherwise, it's behaviorist. Human beings, just how he behaves, and his behavior is not different than the behavior of rats. In fact, they make a lot of research on how human beings can develop different illnesses or whatever, on all different forms of behavior from experiments. The most experiments are with rats. So there's no real difference. There's no difference. The human being is just a human ape developed, that's all. Nothing else. That's what some people think. And just interesting, just by the way, read in our magazine, Moshe Sternbuch reported a meeting he had with 100 scientists and men of medicine also, 100 of them, and how they argued about evolution. You know, they argued that man comes from the ape. So he said, okay, we'll make an agreement that is man like the ape or is man not like the ape? So he said, well, you feel that man is like the ape and you think that your ancestors are all apes, but I think differently. I think what I've met of people, then they're quite different to ape. And they're certainly distinct species, much greater than all the animal world, and they're created by Hashem. And that's why we look to the great saints to show us that there's no way in which human beings can be compared to apes. But that's what's called natural determinism. And shall I tell you what happened to this great professor? So, I'll tell you, I once gave a talk in South Africa to a lot of students on the subject of freedom and determinism, on this very subject. That's what they asked me to speak on. So I quoted this professor, okay, what his view was, most extreme view. For different reasons I quoted. So the chairman then, the chief rabbi of South Africa, and he was we worked together in the student community in England. So he said, in the previous major, more higher level newspaper, Sunday Observer, it's a bit of a higher level paper, So he wrote a series of articles, this same professor, that he had a near-death experience, which he could only explain that he's got a soul. Because when he was clinically dead, so he was in a coma for some time. He came out of the coma, and he said, when I was clinically dead, I was able to see without eyes what's going on in this world. I was able to hear what people said, and I could report it. So I experienced that quite a soul. And also I was coming near like a dimension of being of light and love. So he said, what I've taught all the years, that's an illusion. And this is the truth. Changed. That's what happened today. And more recently, there's something more. A higher level. One of the top professors in Harvard and other places on neurosurgery, who's also a surgeon of the brain, who always regarded the near-death experience, which today there are millions of records, but always thought this is just some illusion that takes place in the mind. And he was a behaviorist, you know, he knew the brain inside out. And he went and had a clinically dead experience when he said, this book is called Proof from Heaven. Eamon Alexander is called. And Proof from Heaven. Proof from Heaven.
And the author? The author?
That's the author, Eamon Alexander.
Eamon Alexander.
I've got the book. Mm-hmm. So in fact, you'll find him on the internet. He made a website. He says, when he came out of his coma, he tried his very best to explain whatever happened on non-spiritual basis, and he couldn't do it. There was no way he could explain what happened to him, except that this is the truth, that the soul is a greater experience than the body, and surely God exists. As previously known as a proponent, you call it called anti-religious science. That's it. That's the world we're living in today. But the Rambam deals with it on the basis of where it's a contradiction. So he says like this. First of all, that Hashem should know which way each human being is going to choose his path to be a saint or a sinner. You should know it beforehand. He said, that's not a problem at all. He says in his terms, I'm going to translate it into contemporary terms. Because, he says, the definition of God is that he is the creator, the constant creator of everything that happens on earth. Not been created once and they left it to itself. He recreates the world. Mechadish, Betubach, Yom Tov, Maaseh Bereishis is the basic concept of God as the creator. And being the creator, he's created time and space. Time and space are part of the dimensions in which we human beings can think. But today, it's even easier to understand the Rambam, much more easier than before. Time and space are dimensions of measurement which we use in our life constantly. But Hashem, by definition, is beyond time and space. And to describe today in Einstein and post-Einstein scientific terminology, it's accepted in science that the universe, as far as we know it, is a time-space continuum. But there's an aspect of reality which is beyond time and space, accepted by all the scientists. Like a not so religious person, some people call him religious at all. In fact, he was against personal religion. Nevertheless, Steve Hawkins, so he says, his major work, he says, science is trying to fathom the mind of God. God's the creator. God's beyond time and space. And the time and space is the time, even time is defined as a dimension of space. These words you would have heard, Einstein's concept. So therefore, the Rambam says, God's knowledge, present, past and future, is all together. While human knowledge, we divide. Got knowledge of the past, knowledge of the present, and we've only got a possible knowledge of what's going to happen. We don't know many things in the future. Certainly we don't know how a person's going to behave in the future, not clearly. But the human mind can break through the dimension of time and space. Because the human mind is a reflection of the mind of Hashem. So deep down in the human mind, where's the soul, the neshama, through the power of the neshama, and that's how do you come into near-death experience, they can know it. They can know what's going on in America and New York at the same time. Because that's a dimension beyond space. But the soul is beyond space. The soul which is inside the human being is also beyond time and space. And therefore, there's an ability in dreams, when you delve into the subconscious, or if you do regression therapy, you can therefore delve into what happened in other times. Just like you can also, what's telepathy? Telepathy, we know that in the human mind there is a possibility, some people have an easier way of the transfer from the subconscious to the conscious, whether in dreams, or sometimes in a trance, or sometimes also even in daytime between people whose souls are intertwined. So a person can have a relative in South America, and he's here in Israel, and they have a feeling for something, telepathy. Well, it exists. It's a fact. You can't deny the power of telepathy. You can prove it frequently. But not everybody. And even those people, only occasionally. In dreams also. In dreams you can sometimes see the future. I saw it in the dream. So how is that possible? Because the conscious mind, it's a barrier that stops the barrage, the constant barrage of what's going on in the subconscious mind. There's so much going on in the subconscious mind because subconscious basically is open to break through the barrier of time and space. And where do you find it? In prophecies. In prophecies. A prophecy, that's how it comes. How does it come in the Chumash we read? Prophecies come through dreams. And human beings can sometimes have prophecies. You can't deny it. It's how do they have it? Or sometimes you see, because most dreams are a mixture of all sorts of illusions, all sorts of things that happen, also things that might happen. But to go and sift it out, it's very difficult. Sometimes you get a vibe, you get a strong dream, and you feel strongly, it's probably going to happen. And it does happen. Because you broke through the barrier. And so it depends on each different constitution. So HaKadosh Baruch spoke even to Rishoyim through dreams. David Melech spoke to Lovin, spoke in a dream. That means Hashem coming through the power of the Rishon, which is the breath of Hashem, he wants to give a definite message. He gives them in a dream. And real prophets, they see it even without a dream. So if the prophet can do it with the power of the soul, of course Hashem sees it all the time. Hashem's mind, what is the mind of the universe? And when he's in the mind of the universe, he knows not only the big powers, every detail he knows. So therefore, what's the problem? He foresees the future. Hakol tzofoi. Everything's foreseen. And then most things are robots and puppets, with Hashem holding it. But in the area of Yirat Shamayim, of being a saint or a sinner, in that area, you give complete freedom. So this also, how do you define a saint or a sinner? According to his circumstances. I mean, there can be a person who's a maniacal murderer, but he's not a wicked person, because he can't help it. Hashem knows. Hashem knows. We may have to go get away with him because he's too dangerous for society. That's something else. But Hashem. And there can be a person who seems to be a great saint, but Hashem says, no. He's a saint on the outside. And all his saintliness is not really his. Who produced that saintliness? His parents, his yeshiva, his Rosh Yeshivas, and his family, his chaverim, they produced the saintliness of the person. And he followed them, and he was affected by them. He fulfilled all the mitzvot, because his whole society and where he'd been brought up told him that's what you got to do. But he did nothing through his innate power of choice. He had his tests inside. He did it shelo lishma. He did it become famous. He did it because he wants to have a high position. He wants to have appreciation. He did not do it. He never did a virtuous act in his life. And therefore, he's upstairs. They say, Olam hafuch ra'iti. There were plenty, Neither's experiences, which are today widely publicized, but one of the earliest sources for them is in the Midrash and the Gemara. There are many that came and described what it was like above. And one of the great sages came back from his clinical death, and he said, the world is upside down there. The simple person who knew nothing here was treated like dirt, so there were people to kill him. And there is the greatest study. Because in secret, he was working on himself. He did kind acts non-stop. And his prayers were sincere to Hashem. He wasn't just saying the words, you know, like an express train. He really meant what he said. And he linked up with Hashem all the time. And according to what he knew, he did such good acts non-stop. And that's, you know, the source of all the stories also. When it comes to Yom HaDin, you don't know. You know, sometimes said about many tzaddikim that they were in shul, and they said, this one Baal Shem Tov, one story told, that he stopped the davening, and he said, none of the prayers are going up to the heaven. All of them it's a beautiful, beautiful shul with many ornaments, and you're only praying up to the ceiling. We're not breaking through. None of the prayer. I can feel the prayers are being heard up above. Because you're just looking at one another. You're looking who's here today, who's not here, and what type of clothes are people wearing. And you're looking at the beautiful architecture of the shul. But it's not going up to Hashemayim. You have to wait until there's somebody to break it. And even one or two here trying to pray hard, but it's not good enough. Hashemayim. In the end, there was a simple boy here. Was saying the Aleph Beis, he cut off, all he knew. He took a Siddur, he couldn't make out the Machzor, he couldn't make out the word. And he said to Hashem, sing the Aleph Beis. He felt me, and he said sincerely to pray to Hashem, he should make up the words of the Tefillah. But it was so sincere, and it was going to the very, and so that prayer broke through. So in general, of course, we're talking wider terms. As it said, don't start judging other people, because you never know. We have to, hit palel means to judge yourself, see how far you go. So this is the concept that sin and saintliness, it depends upon the point of freedom where you are. Do you take it all from the part? That's why do we say Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, each one separately? Because Yitzchak, if he would only have been a Ben Avraham, he wouldn't have added anything. Just follow Avraham Avinu. No. He followed Avraham Avinu, of course, in everything. But he built on it further. He built on it further dimension of his Brit. Brit Yitzchak is power of Gevura. And Yaakov built, we can call it Torah Mudag Milcha Tzadim. He took that as his special challenge, where he had to work himself, where he didn't get the inspiration from his parents and from outside. So that's how we have to understand that in Yirat Shamayim, true Yirat Shamayim means that where there's a balance between good and evil, and you have to, b'chata b'chaim, you've got to choose to go more than what you've received in the past. And also even, it's a constant challenge, because whatever you've achieved in the past, if you're doing it a second time, a third time, a tenth time, because of the past, it's no longer so free, because the past influences your present. Therefore, at every moment, we're given opportunity to work to become more saintly, or the other way. So, according to that concept, there's no contradiction. Hashem knows what's going to happen. He determines all physical matters, because part of nature, nature's predetermined. Correct? Nature's basically predetermined. Like we find the animal world, in the vegetable world. It's also the body of the human being, in many respects, is predetermined, how he's going to grow up, how his body's going to grow. But here's also, there can be a person who can, says already in the Chumash, there can be a person who say, it's a commandment, a moral commandment, to preserve your body, to look after your body. And a person not allowed to do anything dangerous to his health. And there, a person will say, okay, Torah tells me that it's okay for me to eat what I like. And therefore, it doesn't matter how much I eat. Oh, yes, it does. If you eat more than it's good for your health, it's regressing the Torah. Person will say, alright, all the doctors say that every cigarette shortens life by a few minutes, but there was a time when people said, I need it for my mental health, okay? I can't remain sane when I'm in a situation of great emotional crisis unless I take cigarettes. So a person's got to make a judgment. Should perhaps take advice. What he should do from doctors to deal with this. So I'm not saying that every person is forbidden absolutely. Like also even in all laws of health, you know, there are different points of view, but when there's more or less a consensus of opinion that something is dangerous to health, and that also doctors say, you've got to do this. If a doctor says, you know, it's dangerous for you if you don't sleep more, if you don't eat more, you've got to keep it. It's the law of the Torah. It already becomes a moral question. Because Hashem gives us the lifespan, He gives us the koichos, He gives us opportunities, and He expects us, to use them for the good. Always use it for the good. For the good for others. Don't think, because you're here for other people. That's fine. But you're here for other people, and to use your maximum physical and mental powers and keep them as good as possible. It's part of the responsibility. Don't be destructive. Also, don't be destructive of yourself. A person who doesn't sleep enough, and as a result, he can't learn properly, and he can't, not as much as Hashem expects him, he doesn't eat enough, it's just as bad as a person eats too much or sleeps too much. That's what Torah, everything in the Torah is balanced. And if you look at it on a wider level, the most productive human being to create a moral world is someone who follows the way of the Torah to keep the right balance. Lo tosif alav, lo tigra mimenu. So that's what the Rambam says. Just like Hashem Yishbach, just end with another important insight on this question of freedom and predetermination. The Rambam puts it this way, and the Rambam's Mishneh Torah are so selected, each word. So he says there like this, that just like Hashem made a law of gravity, a law of combustion, and that's a natural law, predetermined, one of the laws of nature. So also Hashem desired that the human being should be free to follow the path of virtue or follow the path of vice. It's the desire of Hashem. So that's the deeper meaning of the whole specific gift of human life. Human life is given so that human beings should choose, because Hashem wants human beings to be partners in developing creation. And when Hashem showed, so this will add from the Midrash, when Hashem showed Adam and Chava the Garden of Eden, he said to them, it says in the Chumash, he put Adam there to cultivate the garden. Look after it. He said, what does it mean, look after the Hashem? It says, mitzvot aseh, mitzvot aseh. These are the positive and negative commandments. Because what's described of Gan Eden is describing what this world could be. The world is given here as a garden which has to be cultivated. And what does Hashem say? Be careful that you don't destroy the garden. And that's the root. Man can be a destroyer of the garden, of his own life, the life of mankind, as we see today. Or he can be a citizen of a beautiful garden of love and happiness for all human beings. Look.